Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday night at 7 p.m., and you know what that means? That means it's time for Stunt Trek with Uncle Jim and the Leslie Hoffman. It's been a little while since we talked. We've had some issues. I've been on vacation. Leslie's been dealing with some things, and we didn't want to miss another show. So Leslie and I are here tonight, and we're going to talk. Well, we got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about Leslie's time on MASH and the MASH Olympics. And you never know who you might run into in the mess hall on MASH. And Leslie's got some stories to tell us all about that. But first, I want to see what's going on with Leslie. How you doing tonight, Leslie?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Actually, I don't know. I think we're coming back into a heat wave up here. But along with the heat wave, I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to have a pretty major downpour again. Well, did you have a really bad thunderstorm this past week?
Yes, we did. It got really, really muggy and really, really hot after the rain.
Yeah, well, that's I just walked my dog and I have the air conditioner on in my room, and boy, you go out the door, you get outside, and you go, wow, this is, well, like, as you say, it's hot, but it's not like 100 degrees. It's humid hot.
Yeah, we're getting that here in Vermont. We're getting that in Vermont, too, but at least there's no snow, so that's good.
Well, that could happen next week.
No, very true.
I hope we have a few more months before it starts snowing.
I know. It's crazy. Whenever we do Trek Talk and Charles is out in Las Vegas and he's like, oh, it's 108 in the shade. It's 112. But it is hot here up in Vermont and up in Saranac Lake where Leslie's at. We've been having some really warm days, and usually we don't get those here very often, so that's very odd.
Yeah.
The weather is just out of whack, totally out of whack with the weather.
Yeah, well, just talking about Las Vegas, I mean, you know, there would be days in California, you try to sit in your car, and you sure didn't want to touch the seatbelt, you know, metal seatbelt. You burn yourself. But the steering wheels were so hot that I couldn't even grab it. I would have to kind of drive my car with the palms of my hands until the air conditioner cooled down the inside of the car and the steering wheel enough that you could actually grab it.
Wow, that's hot. That is hot. So, I listen, guys, we are live from 7 to 8 o'clock on Sunday night, which is right now. If you'd like to call and talk to Leslie, if you have a question or a comment, if you want to call and tell us how hot it is where you are right now, or maybe how cold it is where you are right now. Our studio line is open, and the number that you can reach us at is 646-668-2433. I'll say that one more time for you guys. That's 646-668-2433. You just dial up that number right now. We'll get you on the air, and you can talk with myself and Leslie. Tell us how hot it is, how cold it is. Tell us if you liked MASH. Tell us if you liked Nightmare on Elm Street. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. We'd love to chat. So we have, before we start talking about MASH and, you know, who Leslie's has eaten lunch with and some of the other fun things, we do have some sad news to talk about. What do we want to do first? Let's do something fun first. You guys know that whenever Leslie and I get together and talk, we always somehow end up talking about what, Leslie, what do we always talk about?
Somehow. Planet of the Apes. And I don't know if it was yesterday or day before, but, you know, I don't know. I wake up in the middle of the night, but for some reason, I guess I was so tired, I did sleep through it. But on TCM, I think at 3 o'clock in the morning, they had Planet of the Apes. I didn't watch it, but it was on.
Well, today happens to be Linda Harrison's birthday. Now, Leslie, you know who Linda Harrison, what character she played in Planet of the Apes, right?
Boy, I'm drawing a blank on the name, but wasn't she the, I don't know what to call her, the girlfriend or the supposed to be the mate for Charlton Heston?
Yes, she played Nova in Planet of the Apes.
Right.
And Return to the Planet of the Apes, Planet of the Apes Part 2. She played Nova. So today is her birthday, and I thought we'd start out with a Planet of the Apes birthday. So there you have it. Pretty cool, huh? You never know where we're going to meander to when we start meandering, you know?
I
end up anywhere.
I don't know. You know, as you've pointed out, that they did have a series of Planet of the Apes. I don't even remember if it went into a second season or not. But, it might have been fun to work on it. I mean, I believe it was filmed during the time that I was out there, but I never got called on it. But actually, where they filmed Planet of the Apes is also where they filmed MASH, is 20th Century Fox Ranch.
Wow, that's cool. See that?
Yeah,
you learn something new every day.
Yeah, so you drive up to the MASH location, and you'd be driving past these, I don't know to call them, mud huts, or I don't know what you would call, you know, those structures that supposedly the apes in. But yeah, like I said, you'd be driving up this road to the MASH location, and here are the ape houses.
That's funny. That's funny. And
oh, yeah, well, actually, at 20th Century Fox Ranch, I don't remember, other than saying it was the top stories, maybe it was like 3-4 stories worth of the top of Towering Inferno. So, you know, if you were at the ranch, you actually could walk to the top of the Towering Inferno.
And Charlton Heston would have been up there too.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Never got to see him, but Yeah,
well,
no, because they do have fires out in the Malibu area, and plus I don't believe it's the ranch anymore, or someone's bought it, or, well, 20th Century Fox doesn't exist anymore. So I really don't know what's left of any of these I can't sets. You know, I don't know if they're all gone now, or if there's remnants of these sets.
Well, speaking last week, we didn't bring you guys a show, so there is a belated birthday which I wanted to throw out there. And last week was Heather Langenkamp's birthday. And of course, if you guys are listening to this show, we all know who Heather played, of course. And that was in Nightmare on Elm Street, the original one. She wasn't in the second one, but she was in the third one. And she was also in Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And her father was played by John Saxon, who sadly enough recently passed away. I think it was today, wasn't it? Was it today?
No, I think. Well, it's hard to say. Well, I was going to name, you know, things seem to happen in threes with actors. Some people are putting in Peter Green, but he's a singer. No, the three actors that died were Regis Philbin was first, then John Saxon, and then today was Olivia Dohevlin, who was the remaining person alive in Gone with the Wind, which was filmed in 1939. She was 104 when she passed today.
Wow. That's incredible. Now,
yeah,
Leslie, did you ever get an opportunity, when you were on Nightmare on Elm Street, did you ever get an opportunity to work with John Saxon?
Unfortunately, no. You know, again, producers or however you want to say it, they take a script. It's never filmed chronologically. You know, they cut it up and they put together, let's say, oh, we need to be working on this set so many days, and then we need to move over to this set and film so many days. And the set that I was on was the high school, and I don't think John Saxon was ever in the high school. I mean, you know, he was at his house. He was outside his house. He was at the police station. But well, anyways, answering your question, unfortunately, no. I never did get to work with him. And even though I did some horror conventions and you know, there were part of the cast there. He wasn't one of the ones that was at the convention. So sadly, no, I never did work with him.
And other than playing Nancy's father in Nightmare on Elm Street 1, 3, and he actually played himself in The New Nightmare, if you guys obviously have seen that movie, where Heather plays Heather and John plays John, because the movie takes place in reality, so he gets to be himself in that movie. But John Saxon was also in another movie of mine, which is a B-rate Harvey Korman movie, but it's one of my favorites from the 1980s, and it starred Richard Thomas, who's well known as John Boy from The Waltons. And John Saxon plays the big bad guy, the villain in this movie. And this movie came out at the height of the sci-fi craze, and everybody was trying to make a Star Wars movie. Harvey Korman threw one together called Battle Beyond the Stars. And I love it. It's cheapy. It's cheesy. It's campy. But it's fun. And John Saxon is the big bad guy in that movie. And I love it, just for all those reasons. It's campy, it's cheap, and it's fun. And John Saxon is in that. So I wanted to throw that out there to you guys.
Yeah.
If you've never seen it or you haven't seen it in a while, track it down and watch it. It's a flashback to the 80s. It's fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's just a fun movie, and John Saxon is in it. So.
Yeah. No, I didn't look his career up on IMDb, Internet Movie Database, but I'm sure that he easily worked four decades, you know, at least 40 years, if not 50 years as an actor, maybe even 60 years. I didn't look up to see what his first job was, but he definitely was around for a long time.
I remember seeing him in Beverly Hills Cop 2. He was in that briefly. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head. I'm sure, like you said, he's got a very recognizable face, and you would know if you saw him, but Battle Beyond the Stars popped in my mind right away. Nightmare on Elm Street, I think, is the biggest movie that everybody would recognize him from. I did see him in Beverly Hills Cop 2, and that's all I can come up with without cheating. I mean, if I cheated and turned on my phone, I'm sure I could find more, but I'm just going off the top of my head from, you know, what I remember. So.
Yeah, I mean, more than likely, again, I don't have the IMDb up either, is that he probably started in some movies. Not necessarily big roles, but if I had to guess, he probably started in movies and then he went to television, which is interesting. Not every movie actor wanted to do television. They thought it was, a fad or a phase that would just disappear at some point. And believe it or not, a lot of these movie stars thought that working on television was beneath them.
Let me ask you a question about that here for a second. Let's take a look at another actor who's no longer with us, Roy Scheider. Now, Roy Scheider has been in a lot of stuff, but I think he's most known for his role in Jaws. Okay.
Right.
Roy Scheider never did a television role until he accepted the role as Captain Bridger in Sequest. And he was the captain on Sequest for 3 seasons. Now, as an expert, as someone who's worked in the trade, where do you does an actor make more money on a movie and then getting residuals every time that movie's shown on TV? Or do they make more money getting residuals on TV shows that are in constant reruns? How does that pan out? Or are they both about the same?
Well, that's such an it's a long explanation. Because before there was television, theatrical movies usually did not repeat in theaters, so there were no residuals. I mean, what? And also, you have business managers, you have agents, you know. So, depending on how much you made on a movie was, and after you subtract all the agent fees and the business manager, lawyer fees, I mean, that was basically it. Then, when television came into being, they started showing these features on television, but they weren't paying any money. And at that point, there was a bunch of negotiations. It took, contracts are due like every 3 years. And you know, the first time producers weren't going to give residuals, and then they said, oh, we'll give residuals the first 13 times something repeats. And then finally, we did get a point to every time, you know, a show repeats. Well, even that has little fine print to it, but basically every time a show, television show or movie show repeats, you do get a residual. So, answering your, now going back and answering your question, is that I really can't answer, like let's say Johnny Depp gets $20 million a picture, or $10 million a picture. I really, really doubt that when Pirates shows on television that he gets a residual for $20 million. I mean, some kind of deal had to have been struck, you know, like you're going to get a flat-out fee, which will cover every time the movie repeats, while maybe the bit part actors will get residuals. But I just can't believe these multi-million-dollar actors get either there's a cap on the residuals or something's been worked out, because no television, cable or network is going to pay, you know, $20 million out to an actor.
Right. Well, because, I mean, you do have actors like, I'm drawing a black, like Eric Estrada from Chips. You know, he's strictly television. He never moved into the movies. He stayed on TV.
Right. No, now, you know, well, okay, so I guess really answering your question, nowadays, working a television show and getting residuals, in the long run, it may take years, but in the long run, I would say a television actor, you know, and we're talking about the lead, a television actor is going to make more money for, well, what was it, Seinfeld or one of these shows where actors were getting $1 million an episode?
That's what I heard,
and
yes.
I'm not making that up. I just don't remember if it was them. But, you know, I mean, it keeps coming back to you need a good agent, you need a good business manager, and you need a top-rated show. I mean, obviously, if it's a show that they're ready to cancel, they sure aren't going to give you any money for it. But if it's a show that people are clamoring for or the audience absolutely wants, and I'll use the word franchise, and I guess I'm talking about Star Trek. I mean, they know that this is a moneymaker. So, again, depending on negotiations and whatever is how much an actor is making. Oh, well, that brings up another subject, is that, okay, so like on Star Trek, they didn't necessarily want to up how much they were paying actors per episode, but what they would negotiate was, tell you what, we'll let you direct an episode, or we'll let you direct 5 episodes, you know, something like that. Like I said, we've talked about in the past that and Andy Robinson, you know, that he's Deep Space Nine, but he directed a Voyager episode I was on. So then it isn't like they're directing for free either. I mean, then you join the DJ, Directors Guild of America, and you're paid as a director, and I think there's residuals for directors. So, you know, he's getting his money for the Deep Space Nine episodes that he worked and residuals, and then, you know, for Voyager, when that repeats, an episode that he directed, he gets residuals from Directors Guild of America, which, well, now I'm going, as you say, I go rambling off. You know, so money is being put into a health plan and his pension at the Screen Actors Guild, but for the shows that he directed, money is being put into the Directors Guild pension and health plan. So by the time he wants to retire, he has two pensions.
So let's go back in a full circle, talking about movies versus TV. Let's talk about, in my opinion, I wasn't too fond of the movie, but I loved the television series, and I'm talking about MASH. MASH was originally a movie, and I didn't really like the movie as much as I liked the TV show. I really enjoyed the television show, but the movie I didn't find as good as the TV show, and that might be because the TV show was on for, I don't know, 10 years, and you really got to know the characters,
yeah.
Alan Alda and Loretta Swit, and you really got to know these characters really, really well on the TV show versus an hour and a half movie. So that might have a lot to do with it. But you had the opportunity of being in the TV show.
Yeah, no, I've seen MASH the movie, and if I honestly had to say, I think it was much darker. At least MASH episodes, there were a lot of funny episodes that, you know, you laughed at, or they did have a lot of episodes that, you know, were anti-war, or, you know, well, they touched on, maybe this is, you know, that a television show, as you say, they can touch on all subjects. They can develop a character a lot better. But no, the original MASH movie, to me, even though it was supposed to be funny in certain parts, I felt that it was kind of dark in a bunch of parts too. Is that it's not necessarily, if I was flipping through channels, I would stop and watch it again.
No, I agree. The MASH movie is very different from the MASH that I grew up watching on television.
Right. I mean,
very
different. And then the trivia is the only character that went from the MASH movie to television is Gary Berghoff, who plays Radar.
Radar, yep. So recently, though, Leslie, you were featured on a MASH trivia. I saw it on Facebook.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call it featured, but me TV. I like to do quizzes, and there was this quiz that said, "How much do you remember about MASH Olympics?" You know, so I go, "Well, let's see if I remember." You know, the episode, and I, you know, it's multiple choices, and maybe there's 15, 17 different questions, and I start going down, and here's the picture of the piggyback race, and there I am. I never thought I was going to be part of a quiz. I mean, it wasn't asking about me, but well, I say, here's my picture on MeTV.com.
And you were on
Klinger's
back, right? I think you were riding Klinger, or the stunt double for Klinger, right?
No. Now that's really funny. Is that no? That was the stuntman that I was, because if you were to watch the episode. During the piggyback race, we fall down. You know, he trips and the two of us go tumbling. No, what happened was Klinger, I don't know, I guess it was a salami, and I don't know why he just decided he was going, maybe he was trying to, well, I don't know. I don't remember exactly why he kept eating the salami, and he gets sick to his stomach, and he has to back out of the piggyback race. And actually, Margaret was supposed to ride on Klinger. And then Donald Penobscot, which I believe she was already married to, shows up at the camp, and she convinces Colonel Potter to put Donald in as a substitute for Klinger. I mean, that I do remember. I was not riding Klinger or stunt double. That was, what you would call us is called nondescript. I was a nondescript nurse, and he was a nondescript, I don't know, army personnel person, the stuntman.
And did you at least come in third?
Oops, wait a minute. Did you? No, we fell.
Oh, yeah.
We fell. We were out of the race.
Well, we'll have to have another race.
Right. We should have another race. Well, the other thing that I always talk about the MASH Olympics is that they had the crutch race, and I could have easily beaten Loretta Swift, but that's not what, or Margaret, but that's not what the script called for. She had to win the race, so I threw the race. They should have given me extra money for throwing the race.
So Leslie, while you were working on MASH, though, you were hanging out in the mess tent, and you had lunch with a very unlikely person. Why don't you tell the listeners that story?
Well, they had a bunch of long tables outside, and it was lunchtime, and I really didn't, we've talked about this in the past. I'm not going to go up to an actor and start talking to them. If they want to talk to me, then I feel like I've been given an opening to talk to them. I just don't want them to think that, I'm, I thought you were so wonderful in this movie and that movie. Anyway, so I'm sitting at the end of a table by myself, and I hear a voice say, can I join you for lunch? And I say, I haven't even really turned around yet, or as I'm turning around, I'm not going to make somebody go away. I said, yes, you can. Yeah, yes, you can join me for lunch. I turn around, it's Harry Morgan, it's Colonel Potter. And so we had lunch together, and that's what makes it so nice. Well, I think this kind of falls into why you don't go up to an actor and start talking to them, because you sure don't want to talk about their acting career. They get that when they're on the street, when they're not on the set. They sure don't need it on the set. So we sat and had lunch, and we talked about, I mean, I can't exactly remember, but we just had a nice lunch together, two people. I mean, he wasn't like you call me the Leslie Hoffman. He wasn't the Harry Morgan. I mean, it was just two people having a nice lunch together.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because back in the early 90s, when I was running Star Trek convention, we had Will Wheaton was one of our guests. And me and my wife went to pick him up in the limo. And I said to my wife, the one thing we don't want to talk about is Star Trek. We need to be cool. So we can't talk about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And so we pick him up. We jump in the limo, and the first thing he says when we get in the limo is, what do you think about Dr. Bashir on Deep Space Nine? Isn't he a giant gland? That's what Will Wheaton started the conversation off with. And So, like you said, Leslie, that gave you an opening. And we had a nice conversation. We talked about Wesley. We talked about because at that point, he made it clear to us that he was open to talk about that. And because he brought it up, we took that opening, and we had so much fun talking to him just one-on-one in the limo. And I don't remember exactly what we talked about, but it was just fun. Nice conversation.
But exactly, you kind of hit right on it. Is he asked about Deep Space Nine? He didn't ask about the Next Generation. He's heard everything about the Next Generation. It's probably one of the last things he wants to talk about. Or, I mean, I don't know if he's ever come out and said it, but you know, just like. People associate me with No Running in the Hallway and Where's Your Pass, and, you know. I mean, when people say to Will Wheaton, shut up, Wesley, you don't think he's heard that a million times?
Oh, when people post that on our Star Trek board, I'm like, really? Get a life. That is so old. It's not even funny. Let's move on from that, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm a fan. I'm not even Will Wheaton. I'm just a fan, and that bugs me, you know? When it first happened, it was funny. But it's not funny anymore. You know?
I'll even say, you know, people repeating my lines, they're repeating my lines, so it isn't hurtful to me, but because, a different character says, shut up, Wesley, that could be very painful to him. You know,
I agree.
I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't care. But people got to realize that sometimes, you know, a dialogue from a movie it's a dialogue from a movie. But again, if you've heard it a million times and it's not a nice compliment to that person, I can't think of offhand. Another line like that. I mean, you don't need to keep reminding the actor that in one episode or a couple episodes they said, here's a good one, and I just forgot his name, and I know his name, is that, you know, All in the Family, that whatever his name is, that, you know,
Archie
Bunker?
Bunker?
Call him Head.
Meathead? Yeah, Meathead.
Yeah, I mean,
Carl Reiner.
Yeah, so how would you like it if every time you walk down the sidewalk, someone would say, hello, Meathead? You know,
right.
It gets old real fast. I mean, it's, I guess you got to be, wow, they know who I am, they recognize me, but to call someone a meathead isn't exactly the nicest thing to say either.
No, I agree. So speaking of Star Trek, and so when you go to a party, like a Christmas party, and the Star Trek actors are all there and all the directors and the producers and things, what do they talk about? What are those parties like?
See, and that's exactly it, is that, I've been to some Christmas parties, I've been to end-of-the-season parties. We don't sit there and discuss the episodes. I mean, we really are human beings, and Maybe some of them are talking about their kids. Maybe they're talking about a car they just bought. I mean, it It isn't like, well, do you remember this episode and do you remember what happened to me in this episode? No, it's a party, and the subject could be anything in the world.
That's interesting.
You know, again, I can't go, wow, I remember when John Delancey was talking about this or that. I mean, it had nothing to do with Star Trek. It was a group of people. I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how to ask this or approach this. Is that, let's say, an office that somebody works at, you have a Christmas party, are you going to talk about, in accounting today, I did this and that and this, you know? I mean, yeah, that's not what a Christmas party is about. You talk about fun.
Oh, speaking of John Delancey, I remember the first time that my wife and I met him at a Star Trek convention. It was up in Syracuse, New York. It was in the early days of TNG. It was right around the time after Tasha Yar died. And I remember meeting him there, and one of the fans in the audience asked John Delancey, would Q bring back Tasha Yar? And John Delancey answered, only if I can keep her for myself. And the place went wild. And I remember sitting in the audience thinking to myself and saying to my wife, you know, John Delancey is pretty much Q. He acts like Q. He talks like Q. He's kind of Q. Have you ever run into an actor that like I don't know any of the Star Trek actors as other than their characters, but a lot of these actors, do they carry a lot of the traits of their characters with them when you speak with them?
Yeah, no, it is interesting. Is that the Christmas party that I was at? John Delancey was downstairs in the kitchen, and I had made my way down to the kitchen, and as you say, he wasn't being Q, he was being John Delancey, but he's still, how do you say it, he is Q. I mean, that it isn't that he transforms himself into a completely different person to be Q. This is the way John Delancey really is. My parents back in the, mid-60s, all the way up until my father passed away, they used to watch Days of Your Life. And John Delancey, way back in either the late 60s, early 70s, actually was a character on Days of Your Life. And to me, he's really no different. When I saw him on a soap opera, and when I saw him as Q, he really is the same person. Now, I can come up with a story like that. Is my nephew came out to California to be an actor, and when you're a member of the Screen Actors Guild, they have seminars that you can sign up for. And one of them was Jim Parsons, and it was like at the very, very beginning of Big Bang Theory. And, you know, he plays Sheldon. So, you know, you're used to the voice on the television set. You're used to the attitude of Sheldon. We go to the seminar, and Jim Parsons starts speaking. It was no different. As Sheldon, he's just being Jim Parsons. He didn't create the character. It's the same person. Same, I'll almost say, and I'm saying it in a nice way, same snarky attitude even.
Yeah, because I remember John Delancey saying at one point that when they called him up to play the character of Q, they didn't have any background for the character. they couldn't give him any motivation for why the character was doing what he was doing. And so when he had to come up with the character, he said Q is 99% John DeLancey and 1% what the writer writes for him to say. Because it was easier for him to just deliver the lines as John DeLancey would. And when you meet him, that's exactly how he comes across as.
Right. I mean, now I've read that there's times that writers have written movies specifically with a certain actor in mind. And that happens. And sometimes the writer doesn't necessarily have that power. Sometimes they can't get the actor that he wrote the movie for. And now you have someone else playing that part. And things aren't coming to mind, but you read biographies or just write ups on a movie, and they'll just say this person was horribly miscast in this role. They never should have played that role, and more than likely, that role was written for the person that the writer was hoping that they were going to get. But well, I don't know. I'll go back to Johnny Depp, and now you're going to have to help me again on it. Is that when he did Jack Sparrow, he kind of created a very famous rock star, and like I say, I'm totally having a brain fart or spasm on it, but you know, so there are times that an actor sees this character, read the script, and he creates that character, but I don't know, a lot of times, well, especially television, I think, a lot of times you're just playing yourself. I mean, you're saying the writer's lines, but you're playing yourself. I mean, I've even seen Kate Mulgrew. I forget what she was like a police commissioner or something. This is after Voyager. I can't think show either.
Was that Mrs. What's Columbo? That? Mrs. Columbo, was it?
No. No, this was... Well, how do I compare it? I don't even know what to compare it to. I almost think it was that really crazy cable show where the doctor was a clown. And he always had blood on his shirt. And I can't think of that show. But you know, she was like a commissioner, or she was, I don't know what she was. But if you really compared what she was doing on that show, which was a straight-out farce comedy, she was still Kate Mulgrew. She really wasn't that much different than... being Captain Janeway. I mean, and that's the other thing, is comedy is actually harder to play than drama. Because if you really want it to be comedy, you have to play it as straight as possible. I mean, that's the whole thing. Now I'm jumping again. That's the whole thing, like with Leslie Nielsen. I mean, being Drummond on Naked Gun, I mean, or on Airplane, you can't make a silly face and say the line. You got to be absolutely serious and say it's a large building, you know, a hospital, whatever the line is. It's a large building with a lot of rooms, or don't call me Shirley.
Right. Now, Leslie, I've heard stories about, speaking of Kate Mulgrew, I've heard stories about the parties that Kate Mulgrew used to throw on Voyager. Did you ever, were you ever invited to any of her parties, and what were they like?
Kay Mulgrew is Irish, and every year she would have a St. Patrick's Day party outside of the Voyager set, and we had corned beef and cabbage, and we had to stick to the lunch hour. I mean, we couldn't have a 3-hour St. Patrick's Day party. I mean, it had to be, you know, the hour break, but she just would pay for a St. Patrick's Day party. And again, it isn't like you go out on the set and you say, boy, that scene on Voyager was blah, 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 blah. I mean, you just had a St. Patrick's Day party.
Except in this case,
wonderful.
You have Cardassians and Ferengi and Starfleet officers and Bajorans all having corned beef and cabbage at Captain Janeway's trailer, right?
Whoops, wait a minute. unfortunately, the operator didn't pick up what you said.
Yeah, so
can,
in
can
this
you
case...
Again?
Yep, in this case, you have Klingons and Cardassians and Bajorans and Starfleet officers all having lunch at Captain Janeway's, right?
Oop. Almost there.
You're all,
having lunch.
You're all in your costumes from the set, right?
Yeah. Well, except that Cardassians and Klingons and Bajorans were Deep Space Nine. You know, Voyager had different aliens. But on Deep Space Nine, if they were serving lunch outside, which they did do that, sometimes you were able to go over to what they call the commissary, which is the cafeteria, or if there was a large group of people that day, they would just set up tables outside, and a catering truck would come up, and you were given a Deep Space Nine card. So strangers wouldn't get in line. I mean, you get your food from the catering truck, and you go up to the cash. I don't know why they had a cash register, but they had a cash register, and you just handed them, you know, the little pink card that you were given. Yeah, like I said, I have no reason. I can't understand why there was a cash register, because there was no money involved. It was just collecting the cards. But, we'll go back to Planet of the Apes real quick. Is that, you know, supposedly the story was the humans sat with the humans, the orangutans sat with the orangutans, the gorillas sat with, you know, they purposely separated even the different species of the apes. On Deep Space Nine, you'd have Klingons sitting next to Cardassians, sitting next to Starfleet, next to, you know, Morn or whoever, you know. I mean, we would, or Starfleet. I mean, we were all mixed up sitting at tables together.
That must have been quite the picture to have.
It was, and what was so funny was Paramount has, like Universal Studios has a tram. I think sometimes they walk people around, but sometimes they would have a tram. And, yeah, the whole group of us would either be in line or sitting at the table, and these tourists would come by, and here we all are sitting at the table eating lunch.
And tourists are watching you eat your lunch. You're a tourist attraction.
Right. Right. Yeah. Oh, look.
Wow.
It's a Cardassian eating lunch.
And Leslie, what exactly does a Cardassian eat for lunch, by the way?
Whatever the catering truck is serving. I'm sorry. know, they, I want to say they tend to be burritos and tacos. I'm sure there were other things. Breakfast was served to actors, but not the extras. So you could order, you know, like what McDonald's has, is where you have the muffin and the egg and bacon or ham on it, or you know, some combination like that. That was usually what was served for breakfast. Like, say, lunch, for some reason, I'm just remembering burritos and tacos, but I'm sure that there were other things that you could get. Again,
well,
it
Leslie,
was whatever the catering truck had.
Take a look at your clock. Can you believe it?
I'm looking at the clock, and I can't believe that.
Wow.
Well, we're down to, well, let me quickly wrap it up, is that this is a non-Star Trek thing, was as I was on an airplane going back to visit my parents in northern New York, and I get on the plane, and here's Dan Aykroyd and Wendy Jo Sperber and other people that were in the movie 1941. And they were heading back to New York City to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. They were going to have a cast party because they finished the movie 1941. And, I mean, I wasn't, in other words, I wasn't originally invited to this cast party, but because we're on the same plane and Wendy recognizes me, I got to go to this cast party in New York City, and they rented a whole floor. I mean, you know, in this case, I really didn't know anybody per se, but pretty impressive to to go to a party at the Waldorf.
And 1941 is one of my favorite movies. I kind of like that movie. I think it's an acquired taste. Steven Spielberg isn't known for his comedies, and the movie goes in a lot of directions, but I enjoyed it. Especially the stunt egg scene that you're in. That's one of my favorites.
Aw, thank you. Yeah.
So, we are out of time. Can you believe it?
Well,
wow.
That just disappeared like. Well, obviously,
so,
we had a good time. Hopefully,
we
hopefully the
do.
Audience had a good time, too.
We always do. I wanted to say, let you guys know that tomorrow at 7:30, we're going to be doing a show called The Book Nook. It'll be our second episode of The Book Nook. And we're going to have author Dayton Ward on with us, and we're going to be talking about his book, Drastic Measures, which is the second Star Trek Discovery book. We read it, and now we're going to discuss it, and we're going to have the author on with us to talk about it. He also wrote the Modiphius Star Trek Klingon Empire expansion, which we're also going to talk about. And that'll be tomorrow from 7:30 to 8:30. You can head over to our Facebook page, Trek Talkin' and Beyond, for all that information. And I wanted to, before this nice lady cuts us off, I wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you to Leslie for hanging out and chatting with me tonight. Leslie, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Without you, there wouldn't be, you know, Stunt Trek.
Well, without the Leslie Hoffman, who would Uncle Jim have to talk with? Right? So thank you very much. And I want to say thank you to each and every one of you guys listening around the globe. This is truly a global podcast, and we appreciate each and every one of you listening, whether you're listening live on Sunday night or whether you're listening on Tuesday night or Wednesday night or whatever night or day you're listening to. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Head on over to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. Drop Leslie a line. Say hello. She'd love to hear from you. Make sure you check us out on Trek Talkin' and Beyond. And I just want to tell everybody to be good to each other and stay safe. My name is Uncle Jim, and I'll be back next Sunday with Leslie, and we'll have another great show for you guys. Thanks for listening, and have a good night, everybody. Good night, Leslie.
Night. Good night, Jim.
Let's see what's out there. game.